Jesus the good teacher, Jesus the therapist, Jesus the giver of bling. The Issues Etc. book of the month for June is Will the Real Jesus Please Stand Up? 12 False Christs. It's written by regular guest Dr. Matt Richard. Read an excerpt at issuesetc.org or purchase Will the Real Jesus Please Stand Up? By calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. book of the month, Will the Real Jesus Please Stand Up?
The Bible tells us that to minister to the needs of God's creation is an act of worship. To ignore those needs is to dishonor the God who made us. And that is just what we're doing by walking away from this accord.
The American left liked Russia a whole lot more when it was Marxist and communist than the American left likes Russia now.
The fundamental problem for every society is the unattached male.
The fact of the virginal conception, the fact that she is the Theotokos, the mother of God and so forth. We rejoice in those things because they tell us something special, not about Mary, but instead they tell us something special about Jesus, about who he is.
Missouri dairy farmers love Issues Etc.
This discovery of human bones wasn't where it was supposed to be, and it wasn't when it was supposed to be. I read this headline a couple days ago about the alleged discovery of the oldest modern human bones. I think some fragments of jaw and skull that were found, well, they weren't found where they're supposed to be. They were found quite a distance away from where they were supposed to be, and in terms of their age, they were almost twice as old as they were supposed to be, and it sounds like this discovery, if verified, at least from the evolutionist standpoint, is going to have to rewrite the narrative on both the place and the time of the origin of modern human beings. Greetings, welcome to Issues Etc. Coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Dr. David Menton of Answers in Genesis joins us for the first half hour. We're going to talk about this discovery and what it means for the narrative of human evolution. Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, a Fox News contributor, will be our guest. We're going to get her take on former FBI Director James Comey's testimony before the Senate Intelligence Committee earlier today. It kind of depends on your viewpoint as to whether you think this exonerates President Trump or exonerates Comey or the opposite of both. Then Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will join us from Erfurt, Germany, to talk about Christian devotion in our series with him. Part 12, we'll be doing Luther's fourfold strand of prayer, the third strand, and that's confession. Feel free to join us with your questions, your comments over the next 2 hours. Our call-in number 1-877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at @issuesetc, and you can leave your question, comment, show suggestion, criticism, whatever it may be, on the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about the alleged discovery of the oldest modern human bones, Dr. David Menton, a speaker for Answers in Genesis, associate professor emeritus of anatomy at Washington University in St. Louis, and a regular guest. Dr. Menton, welcome back.
Nice to be here, Todd.
What was the previous narrative of both the place and the time of the origin of modern human beings?
Well, the prevailing dogma, of course, is that human beings evolved in Africa, and initially the story was pretty much Eastern Africa, Tanzania, that area, but this particular specimen was not found there. It was found in the northwestern part of Africa, in Morocco, and of course there have been fossils of Homo sapiens found in South Africa, so... Spread quite widely across Africa, we have Homo sapiens specimens arising, leading some to even conclude that maybe Homo sapiens evolved independently in three different places. But the real issue here, of course, is that the authors of this paper published in Nature say that their dating method shows that the Homo sapiens fossils are 300,000 years old, 315,000 to be exact, plus or minus 34,000 years. And the previous prevailing view is that the first Homo sapiens were found in East Africa about 2,000 years ago. So it pushes the age of the origin of humans in the mind of evolutionists back another 1,000 years.
This wouldn't be the first time that evolutionists have had to rewrite, revise, and change the story of the origins of modern humans, would it?
No, and of course, the thing I think people need to realize, we're not talking about ape men in this study. These are absolutely Homo sapiens, no question about it. As the authors themselves say, if you were to see these people today on the bus, if they were dressed in a Western style, you probably wouldn't look twice. They have some characteristics just as today. Different people groups have certain characteristics. Australian Aboriginals have a more pronounced brow ridge in general than other people do. There are distinctive differences in the skeletons of Asians and Europeans and Nordics and Eskimos and American Indians. A good anatomist can see, you know, detailed differences. But it's all 100% Homo sapiens, so this is not an ape man story. The story here is that these individuals, according to evolutionary dating methods, are much older than we previously thought. That puts the origin of Homo sapiens back 300,000 instead of 200,000 years ago. Now, of course, I don't believe any of these dates, but this is exciting, I guess, for those who do. But to give you a little bit of perspective here, this particular area, I don't know if I'm going to get the name correct, Jebel Irhoud in Morocco. It's been known for a long time that there are Homo sapiens fossils in this region. They started mining there back in the 1960s, and shortly after that, they began to find fossils of various animals, gazelles and wildebeests and zebra and what have you, but also these human fossils. And at first, back in the 60s, they were convinced that they were 40,000 years old. And nobody really said too much about them. For an evolutionist, that's a reasonable figure. For Homo sapiens, it would be 40,000 years old. Then other studies of the age were attempted using various dating methods. The electron spin resonance dating method dated those same rocks and bones to 90,000 to 190,000 years. And then a method called Couple U series dated them from at about 160,000 years, plus or minus 16,000. And then a marine isotope stage dating dated them at 374,000 years old. So you see, we've got quite a range of dates here. Kind of reminds me of the old Chinese proverb, man with two clocks never knows what time it is. We have all these different clocks giving different ages, wildly different ages. So I really don't trust any of them. The method used to come up with the 300,000, is called thermoluminescence. And, of course, the authors are arguing that finally they got the correct date, 300,000 years. But this method in the past was mainly used for dating pottery. Pottery and figurines from ancient sources, and it takes advantage of the fact that the clays in pottery, like minerals in general, can show a thermal luminescence phenomena when they're exposed to radiation in their environment in which the fossil or the mineral exists. And this radiation causes electrons to be kind of stored in the crystal lattice of the mineral, and that accumulates with time. So when a piece of pottery is fired to make it, you've molded it and then you fired it, firing it causes it to lose whatever stored thermoluminescence it had, and it starts building it again. So what they actually dated were not the bones. They are not able to be dated by this technique. They dated flint tools and spear points. And the reason they felt they could date them using this method is these spear points and flint tools, some of them showed evidence of having been exposed to fire. They had a black shower on them or whatever. And that would have essentially set the thermoluminescence clock. And that's what they're calculating from. There are a lot of things that lead to error in this technique. Any exposure to sunlight, exposure to different levels of radiation, exposure to water. Even when they date things that are in units of thousands of years, like, say, pottery, the error can be considerable, and there seem to be a lot of contributing factors for it. So I don't take the date seriously myself.
Now, the claim here, of course, is this is kind of the evolutionary capstone of what evolutionists will say is a long trail of various, they'll even say species of human being, and including things like Neanderthals that they will say are a side species to Homo sapiens. How complete, by their own accounting, is the track record of what, ape to this Homo sapiens, in terms of actual records?
Well, you know, the authors of this particular study really don't get into that. They speculate briefly that the creatures that became what they're looking at, which are 100% human, Homo sapiens obviously must have predated them before 300,000 years. And, you know, you'd have to go back then to Australopithecines and things like this that are presumably pre-Homo. But they don't really address that at all. They're talking about human specimens and obviously fabricated tools and spear points. And they're simply arguing that it's older than we had ever thought before. And I would predict that they'll continue to find older and older specimens for probably any fossil. Because of the way that they're dating, you'll always find something that dates a little older. Oftentimes, if a date is unreasonable, it's thrown out. But there's really only three things that this study offers us. One, it claims to show, as I say, humans evolved earlier, Homo sapiens. It also suggests that humans evolved in several places in Africa, not all in one. And the third thing they try to argue in the paper is that the evolution that this does show, this study, is the evolution of the brain. That the real big story in human evolution is the evolution of our brain, because our body looked exactly the same, they argue, 300,000 years ago. Our skull looked essentially the same, easily recognizable as a human skull. But they're arguing that the brain was different. And what is that based on? They have sort of what look like CAT scans of the skull, so they get a kind of an interior view of one of the skulls they found, and they can sort of image what an endocast might look like or the shape of the brain inside of the skull. And they're arguing that the brain is a little more elongate. It's of the same size as brains would be in humans today, but they're arguing the shape of the skull and therefore the shape of the brain is a little different. And it's interesting because when they first found these human specimens in Morocco, they thought they were similar to Neanderthal man. And I think that that's indeed the case. The Neanderthal skull is elongated front to back compared to most modern human skulls. Our skulls are more globular. They're taller in the center and not so long front to back. But again, this falls within the range of normal human variability. I don't think it tells us anything about any real neurological details of what's going on in the brain. It's just a change in shape, and what that would have to do with what you would call evolution of the human brain, I have no idea.
Dr. David Menton is our guest. He's a speaker for Answers in Genesis. When we come back, we'll talk more about the alleged discovery of the oldest modern human bones on this Thursday, June the 8th. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
Memoria Press invites all Issues Etc. listeners to explore our Simply Classical curriculum, a set of full-year academic curriculum packages for children with learning challenges. Our classical writing program and our Christian studies are now based on your favorite CPH Bible storybooks. To learn more, visit classicalspecialneeds.com and use promo code LPR to save on your initial purchase. That's classicalspecialneeds.com.
Our cities are some of the greatest mission fields on the planet, but the footprint of the church is shrinking. We dare not shrink from our cities. Christ is needed now in our urban areas. From chaos, turmoil, decay, death, and destruction, Jesus brings peace, hope, resurrection, eternal life, and rebuilding. And you can help by being a hero for the city. Find out how at lcms.org/citymission or on Facebook at LCMS City Mission. Every city needs a hero. Capes and helmets not required.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start. The foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Have you put off your decision to attend the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference to the very last minute? That's okay. You can still register for $80, but the registration fee won't include the meal plan. Register today at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385. The 5th Annual Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 9th and Saturday, June 10th in Collinsville, Illinois.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the alleged discovery of the oldest modern human bones. Dr. David Menton, speaker for Answers in Genesis and associate professor emeritus of anatomy at Washington University in St. Louis, is our guest. You said before the break that this variation that the authors of this paper claim to see in this human skull of a more elongated brain doesn't tell you anything about the evolution of the brain. What did you mean by that, Dr. Menton?
Well, you know, the idea is that the brain has been the main thing evolving over these 300,000 years since this human being presumably lived, according to the study, and that's what evolution's been about. We've been Homo sapiens all this time. Our bodies, our skull, our face, everything looked basically the same, but somehow the brain was evolving. Well, that's an interesting claim, but what is it based on? There's obviously no neurological study. They didn't go in and study the cortex or the medulla or the frontal lobes or how much of the brain is devoted to this or that function. They have no data for that. They're looking at fossilized skulls. They can get roughly the dimensions of the brain, which are large, and they can get roughly the overall shape. But what on earth does a shape of the brain tell us about brain evolution? Are short brains smarter than long brains? I mean, we know that big brains aren't really smarter than small brains. How large a brain is on a human being depends on how large the human is. Larger people have bigger brains than smaller people, but it has no correlation to intelligence. So although the study makes a big thing out of this, they don't really have any data other than roughly the shape and length of the brain compared to its height. This is really very trivial information. It's hard to imagine that this has gotten the attention and excitement that it has. I think it actually raises a problem for the evolutionists, and that is they have more years now than they really want to have for Homo sapiens. You know, today we hear concern about population growth, that the population is growing at a rate that, you've seen the graphs. The graph is almost a straight line going up at an angle, and they show that 50 years from now, you know, we're going to have X number of people, and it's just going to be, we're not going to be able to handle it. Well, if you can project a curve to the right, you can also project that curve to the left. And if you take any of these growth curves that you see, giving an alarming view of population growth, if you run the curve backwards until it hits the zero line, you'll find that any growth curve you look at is going to hit the zero line at about 4,000 or 5,000 years running backwards. So if human beings, Homo sapiens, essentially like us, have been breeding and producing offspring for 300,000 years rather than for, say, roughly 4,000 years after the flood, things started again, the family of Noah, basically six people started reproducing again. So you can say human population growth began again about 4,000 years ago. That fits in very nicely into the growth curves we see today. But if you try to project back 300,000 years using anything remotely like plausible growth curves we see today, it just doesn't work. You end up having to show a normal growth curve back to about 4,000 or 5,000 years. Then you've got to run a kind of a long line just close to zero. We call it an asymptote that goes back to 300,000 years. That would be what we call a hockey stick curve. And it gets to be pretty ridiculous. I think they have more years now, the evolutionists, than they really want for Homo sapiens to be reproducing. It's very hard for them to account for it, but easy to account for a population today in about 4,000 or 5,000 years.
I wanted to talk about, you had mentioned in some of the press accounts that I saw of the discovery of modern human bones in Morocco, also talked about Neanderthal and talked about this kind of co-evolution that was taking place between these two, they said, species of human being. How do you respond to those who continue to believe that Neanderthal, while he certainly existed, was a separate species of human being?
Well, you know, Neanderthal has been kicked around for a long time. I have a skull that I purchased from a German company called Samso that makes replica skulls of living creatures as well as fossil. And I have a Neanderthal skull, and printed right on the skull, I bought it about 20 years ago, is Homo sapiens, and then subspecies Neanderthalensis. So they cited a subspecies, but the genus and species were just exactly what we have today, Homo sapiens. And then it became popular here about, I don't know, 10 years ago, to say, no, Homo sapiens, it's not Homo sapiens, it's Homo Neanderthalensis. So they've given it a different species designation. Now, bear in mind, we have a lot more than just bones and bodies for Neanderthal man. We have a lot of cultural evidence. In fact, a paper published just in the last year or so discussed a cave site that was occupied by Neanderthals. And these folks had apparently taken the stalactites and stalagmites in this cave, broke them up into uniform length pieces, and built a sort of a curved brick wall inside the cave. Didn't have mortar or anything like that. These were just stacked. But this is not the behavior of some, subhuman. Neanderthals were fully human. There is very good evidence they had the same speech capabilities as we have. Their brains were larger on average than our brains are today. It's just a people group that developed after the flood. Now, we can go in and start throwing out species names. We can say, okay, but it's or subspecies. But these are not real categories of taxonomy anyway. We know that species can vary. It's the biblical kinds that are the actual fixed barriers that creatures never get away from. So the canids, the dog kind, wolves and coyotes and dogs are all different species, but they're capable of interbreeding, and that makes them a biblical kind. So I'm not sure what we accomplish by throwing in a different species name for Homo, when we look at Neanderthals. We could do the same with Cro-Magnon man. We could do the same today. We could declare, black folks and white folks to be two different subspecies. But in fact, the research that's been done in human genetics, the Human Genome Project, has led scientists, if not the federal government, to conclude that there really are not several races of humans, but that genetically we're one race. Now, in terms of our treatment in society, you can make a case for different people groups having suffered differently. I'd certainly go along with that. But if you're speaking strictly biologically, there's not enough variability among humans today to even put us in different races, to say nothing of subspecies or species. But we can take a fossil, of course, and declare it to be any race we want.
So finally, with about 30 seconds here, Dr. Menton, what did these archaeologists and paleontologists, what did they discover in Morocco?
Well, they discovered some very fine human remains that shows that humans existed in large portions of Africa in our past history, subsequent to the flood. And the dates, I think, are just simply fictitious. So I give them no credit for pushing the origin of man back 100,000 years. I give them credit for finding some very nice human fossils. And by the way, all these fossils were found a long time ago. This is not recent stuff. We're talking 2007 to 2011 for some of them, and other fossils going back to the 1960s. And here we are getting excited about fossils found that long ago. The excitement all stems from the fact that they're now believed to be older than they were before. And that's kind of, that doesn't really impress me terribly.
Dr. David Menton is Speaker for Answers in Genesis and Associate Professor Emeritus of Anatomy at Washington University in St. Louis. You'll find a link to Answers in Genesis under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Dr. Menton, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Molly Hemingway is with us on the other side of the break. We're going to be talking about former FBI Director James Comey's testimony before the Senate Intelligence Committee earlier today. Stay tuned.
Imagine this. What if you planned your vacation? You picked the location based upon where you knew there was a good Lutheran church. Well, we're here to let you know that if you're planning a Southern Oregon vacation, whether you visit Crater Lake, raft the Rogue, fish for salmon, or head down to the Redwoods, there's still a place for you to receive forgiveness. Faith Lutheran Church in Rogue River, Oregon. What's a vacation without the gospel? Faith Lutheran Church, Sundays at 10 a.m. Visit faithrogueriver.org.
If you've ever attended an Issues Etc. conference or any number of events that take place across the Senate and have wondered why more people from my congregation aren't here, check out the special seminar package the CLCC is offering for the 500th anniversary. All you need so the pastors of your circuit can organize, promote, and present a seminar that appeals to the members of your congregation, even the youth, is provided free by the CLCC. Just go to theclcc.org and click on the blue box, or check us out on Facebook.
Essential exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
If you've ever wondered why Amazing Grace is the national anthem of funerals, or pondered the state of your eternal soul after you die, the Lutheran Witness has you covered. Check out the June and July issue of the Lutheran Witness to learn more about death, dying, heaven, and hell. Not a subscriber? Visit cph.org/try-Lutheran-Witness for a special offer of $6.99 for 6 digital or print issues. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective.